morning and welcome to the Wednesday, March 28th meeting of the Government Operations and Elections Committee. A couple of housekeeping details for you here. The bill that we'll be hearing, sixth on our list today, number six, will be House File 3606, and that is to allow the individuals who would like to testify for or against that to be able to check in with Santa. Santa, if you want to stand up and identify yourself as the page. Sure. Many have identified that they'd like to speak in advance. We want to make sure that we have all of those who have signed up in advance who are here to get them on the list. She's going to ask if you are speaking for or against House File 3606 so that we can give equal hearing to both sides of the issue, and this will help us. If you are not on the list and would like to testify, that is perfectly fine as well. Once again, see Santa and she will make sure that you get on the proper list of for or against House File 3606. And again, there's some housekeeping details on that. If you are interested, House File 3606 will be the final bill we'll take up this morning. If you are for or against, and if you have signed up in advance, do check in to make sure that you are here and that we can check you off the list as having signed up in advance. Make sure that you are here. Or if you'd like to testify and are not signed up in advance, that's perfectly fine as well. We just need to make sure we get you on the list of for or against. And with that, Representative Joe McDonald, welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I will move House File 3536 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services. To the General Register. Excellent. Representative McDonald, your bill is before us. You'll give us a little bit of a setup, and then we'll have a conversation.
Welcome, Mr. Chairman, and esteemed members of the committee. It's a very simple bill. You've heard that often. This bill repeals the term limits on members of the Physician Assistance Advisory Council. There's many councils that the state has put together that have term limits and some members that don't have term limits. This is one particularly Physician Assistance Advisory Council that really would be best if it repealed the term limits and was more in line with several other advisory councils that the legislature has passed in years gone by. So that basically is the gist of the bill, Mr. Chairman, and I turn it back to you.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Any member questions at this time on House File 3536, the repeal of term limits for certain members on the Advisory Council for Physician Assistance? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the only question I have, is there a reason why they want to do that? Is there some members they want to keep on? Or I mean, I don't know the reason why term limits were put on in the first place, but are they having trouble getting other members to step up and serve on that?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Yeah, under this category of the Advisory Council, there's several of them when it's dealing with health care. This is the only particular one that actually has term limits. So we just want to get it more in line with the others. And I think also they want to make sure there's consistency on members who are advising the physician's assistants and more consistency when it comes to handling complaints and other information regarding the Assistant Advisory Council.
Representative Nelson, follow up?
That's fine. I just was curious if there was a reason, if they were short, having trouble getting, you know, the qualified people. I don't see the whole thing here, but there's usually a list of people that have to be on this, and are they having trouble getting people to serve on it? And but I see no objection other than that. I was just curious.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Seeing no other committee questions at this time, is there anyone from the public who'd like to testify on the matter before the committee? House File 3536. That is before the committee. Anyone from the public wishing to testify on House File 3536? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative McDonald, we will give you the final word on the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for accommodating my schedule today and putting me before first, because I have a bill up in the Tax Committee above us. With that, I just thank you for the committee's time and look forward to bringing this to the House floor.
Seeing no other member questions and public testimony, I renew my motion that House File 3536 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative, you are on your way to attack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Please don't raise their taxes while you're there.
I'll lower them for you, sir.
The next bill on the agenda is Representative Keel, 3137. Good morning, Representative Keel. Welcome to the committee. House File 3137. I will move before the committee to be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Good morning. If you'll start with your bill setup.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
House File 3171 is another one of these bills that looks at the challenges of vulnerable adults, dealing with those that have social isolation, are at home by themselves, at risk for all kinds of vulnerabilities, let's put it that way. There's at least 8 million adults over the age of 50 that are affected by social isolation. The problem can impair mental performance, compromise the immune system, and increase the risk of dementia, inflammatory, and heart disease. 29% of elderly Minnesotans live alone. The lack of social contacts among older adults is associated with an estimated $6.7 billion in additional Medicare and spending annually. This bill is another working group to look at the social isolation, making sure that our seniors, anybody 55 and older, examining what we can do to help them seek care and have that conversation. This may very well end up being part of the larger working group at some point. It's kind of my thinking, but right now I wanted to keep them separate. This is a bill that is, the report has to come to the legislature next January and sunsets. So it's a one-time working group. Basically, I wouldn't expect this to go any longer than that. And with that, I don't believe I have any testifiers that came with me today, so I'm stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Keel. I don't have any member questions right now, so you have no testifiers, and we don't have any testifiers that have signed up, but we will open it up to see if anyone is present here today that would like to testify on House File 3171 that is before the committee. Anyone from the public wishing to testify on House File 3171 that is before the committee? Seeing no public testimony or hearing no public testimony, Representative Lee, followed by Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, I just have a question for line 2.14. When you said additional members representing communities of color, do you know how many members are you expecting? Or
yes. Representative Keel.
No, not at this point. It was a suggestion by the Giving Voice Chorus, and I'm really hoping that how we deal with this is we make sure that we have people from all walks of life, rural, metro, communities of color, different nationalities, because I think part of the elder abuse conversation also goes to how we handle, there's different, the cultures have different looks at how we handle elder, especially elder abuse, or elders in general, but and we can think about disabilities at the same time.
Representative Lee, follow up. Representative Mason, followed by Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Years ago, Peter, and I can't remember his last name, from Search Institute said, "We are the only culture that has separated generations." And for years I thought about the way that we have all these senior housings separate from the rest of the population. So I really believe this is something that we need to be addressing. And I did have one question. I mean, it looks like you've got a pretty comprehensive group of people that we know address the elder population. And I'm thinking, is there a possibility for some others that might be capable of being added after this?
Representative Keel.
I would believe so. I think all the way to the floor we could amend something if we needed to, although I'm hoping by then we have a defined number.
Representative Mason, follow-up?
Thank you.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Following up on Representative Lee's comment regarding line 2.14, and also, I'm going to bring your attention to 2.30. You're referencing people of color. I'm wondering if that's going to be inclusive enough. I mean, are you trying to get at minority populations in general, or is there a way of tightening this up? Would the term people of color be comprehensive.
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sandstead, you know, that's something that we should probably look into. It wasn't questioned earlier, and giving voice, like I said, came with the language. But it is something I will assess between this and the other working groups that we're looking at to help vulnerable adults.
Representative Sandstead, follow up.
Just for clarification, then your intent is like minority populations as well. Okay, she's nodding yes. Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you. Seeing no other member questions and no public testimony, Representative Keel will give you the final word on the bill.
I'd like some support for this.
I renew my motion that House File 3171 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Our next bill on the agenda is going to be House File 3674. Representative O'Neill, if you'd like to make your way to the testifiers table as I set up the bill and get it ready before us. I move that House File 3674 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Representative O'Neill, welcome to the committee. If you will proceed with your bill setup for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, this bill came out of when I was chairing the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, and we were asking for information from MMB. And so this clarifies and standardizes some of the information that we would like to see in the future. So House File 3674, when MMB submits state employee contracts to the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, they must provide the following information about the contracts. It would require itemized breakdown of how the total costs fit within the overall budget of each agency, board, committee, department, or council. It would also require that an itemized breakdown of all of the costs of the contract, both salary and non-monetary benefits. It would require a breakdown of which appropriations or funds will be used to cover the costs of the contracts, and if any transfers have to be done between agencies, that detail would also need to be provided. It further goes to say that if contractors are used to be paid out of these appropriations, that information would be required. And finally, a detailed statement is to be provided of any contingency plans if the projected revenue is not sufficient to actually pay for the contracts. And that is the bill. Thank you.
Representative O'Neill, thank you for the setup. Are there member questions at this time? Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Neill, saw that last point that you made. I was just, when I read through the bill, we have many different departments and with many different levels of staffing. At that times, there's different levels of open positions that they don't fill, maybe in anticipation of having to budget cuts, or maybe in anticipation, it just happens that they have. So we could have 100 different contingency plans for one contract. I guess it's good to have contingency plans, but it could affect each department differently and each different staffing group differently. How do we, you're expecting to see 100 different plans or one plan that fits all? Because I don't see one plan fitting all.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson. Well, we actually asked all of the commissioners this last time around, specifically, did all of these contracts fit within their budget parameters? And if so, or if not, then how would they pay for them? And so that was something that an exercise that they've already done. They felt very comfortable with that exercise. I haven't heard concerns about that. I don't know that we need to get into that level of detail that you're discussing where you'd have 100 different contingency plans, but it should be something that we think about and look at strategically. You know, just like if you're planning for anything else, you want to, you know, have an anticipation of what the costs are going to be. You look at your projected revenue. If there's going to be shortfalls, what will be your plan? So I hadn't heard anything from any of the commissioners that this was something that was too burdensome, but we certainly, I'm sure MMB is here and they could speak to that.
Representative Nelson, follow up.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just don't want thinking a one size fits all, because the different departments could have different contingencies or different ways of having to deal with it. So you're not looking for a one, Representative O'Neill, you're not looking for a one size fit all. You're just looking that they've looked at this and have a plan in mind.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative Nelson, that's the intent of the bill.
Seeing no other member questions at this time, we do have two individuals that have signed up that want to testify on this, and I will ask them both to come forward at this time, and we'll bring them into queue. Mr. John Pollard and followed by Mr. Edwin Hudson. If they are here, we'll ask them to make their way to the testifying table at this time. Good morning, Mr. Hudson. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you to speak about House Bill 3674. We really appreciate the opportunity.
I'll just ask you to identify yourself. I'm sorry.
Okay. My name is Edwin Hudson. I am Deputy Commissioner of Enterprise Human Capital at MMB, reporting up to Commissioner Myron Franz. So, again, thank you for this opportunity to be here this morning. I just have a few comments, concerns that we would just like to mention here. We appreciate the legislature's desire to receive information that assists them in there to make good informed decisions. So in this case, we're talking about the estimated budget impacts on employee contracts. So we really do appreciate your requesting of information. Over the past several months, we've had several members, we've provided members with information and data more so than we have ever before. And we were pleased to respond to all the various different types of requests, and we believe that we fulfilled the nature of those requests to the best of our ability. MMB is not opposed to providing information and data to the legislature, particularly data that they find useful in making decision. We believe that's our fundamental responsibility, is to give you that information. That said, we do believe that it doesn't have to be prescribed in statute. You can just ask for the information, and we'll be happy to provide you the information you like to have, and we believe we've done that, as demonstrated with the volume of information we just completed, again, as I said, unlike ever before. In order to have a productive conversation, we believe that it's important for people to recognize the data is what it is. It is a point-in-time data. Employee compensation estimates are a point-in-time data dependent upon how the data is created. And it comes with several caveats and assumptions and limitations. So we would ask that there would be some recognition of that, that there are some factors we just don't know. And already mentioned, employee turnover would be an example of data we would not know. We can tell you today how many employees we have, but we cannot tell you, as an example, how many will be retiring next month, not until they come forward and make that information for us. So it's difficult at times to forecast beyond or to provide data giving some variables that are just not stable. So with that, I'll just be available for questions, but we just wanted to let you know that we're not opposed to that, but we find that this particular bill is just unnecessary.
Mr. Hudson, thank you for being with us this morning and sharing your thoughts. You. Members, questions of Mr. Hudson at this time. Representative Sandstead.
Mine is actually for the author.
Very good. Representative O'Neill. I'm sorry, Representative Sandstead for Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. I see the bill provides for, I'm going to use the word report loosely, but information to be, you know, provided in a form prescribed by the Commission. So whether this is through a report or some other means, that's fine. But when is this due? What is the time period?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it is due when they get submit the contract. So when MMB goes through the negotiation process, I believe it's in here somewhere, but I can double check, and maybe even staff can just look. But it's simultaneous. So when MMB finishes the work with unions and the unions have ratified it and they sent it to the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, so we have a 30-day clock. So we have to work very, very quickly at the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. It's unlike any other committee here in the entire legislature. So we have to be very, very quick with what we do. We have to, and maybe this is too much information for us to absorb at the time, but you know, I'm willing to take that risk of too much information as opposed to too little. But it needs to be submitted with the contract so that we can work very quickly.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative O'Neill. In my opinion, we passed too many laws that aren't needed, and this is probably one of them. Why do you think this legislation is truly needed.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mason. I appreciate you asking me that question. It comes out of a working relationship back and forth with MMB, and there was a lot of confusion. Again, coming back to the 30-day clock, it is a lot of pressure to try to absorb these large contracts. One contract is 1,000 pages. So to filter through that, understand what it's functionally doing, understanding whether or not that contract fits within the budget parameters that we had passed in the previous biennium, all of those things, all of those factors is a lot of work to go through. And so if we start on the same page, whether I'm the chair or someone else is the chair or if it's 10 years from now, at least everyone is on the same page of this is how this should function. We should at least find out the full impact of these contracts, how do they affect the budgets of each agency, commission, board, and so on. And then, you know, if there are some hiccups along the way, is there contingency plans on how to deal with that? And so it's a basis of information. We could certainly ask for more, and we did in the past ask for more than what is here. But this just gives us a structure so everybody knows what page we're starting on. And I think it's really important whether it's, you know, I'm the chair or somebody else is the chair going forward, or we have this commissioner or we have a different commissioner. These are basic parameters that you need to address and look at if you're really going to fulfill the full function of the subcommittee on employee relations.
Okay. Okay. Mason, follow up.
A question. Can you get the information now without the bill?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mason. We did get some of this information. We did not get all of this information, and this was put together as we were going through the process of, you know, what information would be most valuable to, again, address this in that 30-day clock time, because it's a, you know, it's a very short amount of time to go through a very large contract, and sometimes we're getting 2, 3, 5 contracts, you know, 6 contracts at one time, so it's a lot of data to go through.
Representative Mason.
Again, if you can get the information now, it would seem to me that there'd be that this is unnecessary.
Mr. Chair, may I just respond?
Representative O'Neill, certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, it's making sure that everybody is on the same starting page. And I think it's very important to have that clearly laid out for whoever is in charge of the governor's office, the administration, and the legislature and that committee. So I just think it's a really good, instead of reinventing the wheel every time you have a new commissioner or a new chair for subcommittee employee relations, you can look at the statute and say, here's the structure that we're going to start with. Again, because we have the 30-day clock, and it's not a lot of time to process all that.
Okay, thank you.
Before I go to Representative Sanchez's question, again, I wanted to see if Mr. John Pollard is here, as he had signed up in advance as well. Okay, and also wanted to do a quick two other pieces of housekeeping detail. If there's anyone else who would like to testify on House File 3674, ask you to get queued up with Santa, and she will get you in. And if you've arrived late, the final bill that we are going to be taking up today is 3606, House File 3606, and ask you, so many people have checked in or have identified that they'd like to testify on that bill in advance. We're asking that you check in with Santa, and if you just once again identify yourself for the group, so that if you were for or against, to make sure that you are here. And if anybody from the public who did not sign up in advance would like to testify, we certainly want to get to you as well. And Santa's keeping a list of those who are for and against so that we can make sure that we give equal time to both sides of that issue. With that, Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had made the statement just a minute ago that without this legislation in place, you had requested some information, or you requested information and you received some of it but not all of it. My question for you would be, if we were to pass this into legislation, would this do anything to really mitigate the reasons that other information wasn't provided to you? Is it a matter of MMB just couldn't get it to you in a time frame that was appropriate? I do understand the time constraints you have to work under, but was it a matter of they couldn't get you that information within that time? And if we pass this, does this change anything?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sanchez. So what I meant is, maybe I didn't say it clearly, some of the things that we're asking for here is a little bit different than what we had asked for from MMB. So, and if this is just written a little bit more clearly than I think we had tried to convey, and we went back and forth about, you know, what is exactly that you need. So this is a little bit more thoughtful process, because we were just under a huge time crunch of trying to weave our way through it. So that's really what I meant, is that, you know, this is a little bit better written. It's a slightly bit more information that we had asked for before, but I think it'll give us a better picture.
Representative Sandstead, follow up.
Okay, this is for MNB, actually.
Mr. Hudson, if you'll return, please. Thank you for rejoining. So just state your name again for the record, and then Representative Sandstead, on your response, if you'll state again who you are. Representative Sandstead, your question, please.
Thank you. My question to you is, in your opinion, does this legislation work with you? Are the pieces of information being requested something that MNB can provide within the time frame that they would need to work on these contracts?
Mr. Hudson.
Mr. Chair, again, my name is Edwin Hudson with Minnesota Management and Budget, the Deputy Commissioner of Enterprise Human Capital. In my opinion, the law is a little bit restrictive. Sometimes it's difficult to gather some of the information as requested. There are nuances, I think, that we need to consider, some nuances that are beyond our control that we can't exactly report out on. We can only do the best we can. In some cases, we may even have to rely on historical trend data to get the information as closely matched as possible to the requester. So this is a little restrictive, and also you have to keep in mind that our systems aren't the greatest, and our software is not the greatest. And sometimes this requires a lot of manual manipulation and gyration, and requires a lot of resources, as it did with this time. We had to take people who were dedicated to other things to come off and to put this information together in various permutations. Keep in mind there were more than one request, and some of them were very similar, maybe with just some slight modifications. So it's very difficult to do that, and we do the best we can, and we believe that it's unnecessary, and we will continue to do the best we can. Plus, we're available to consult with anyone who wants to talk about the data.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on the matter before the committee on House File 3674? Seeing none, seeing no other member questions at this time. Representative O'Neill, we will give you the final word before the committee takes consideration of your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And just listening to Mr. Hudson's conversation, this is really the reason for the bill, is because we did have, we have another body. and so this is a joint commission between the other body and this body. And there are several members that did ask for different bits of information. And he is correct that sometimes it was slightly different or a little bit of addition. And really, this would get to, this is our starting place. So instead of having all these members kind of recreate the wheel, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, this would at least give us a starting place of, let's start with this information. And so that is, Mr. Hudson really nailed it on the head, that there was a lot of confusion. It was very difficult. They had to have staff kind of divert time. And, of course, while we needed the information, this is this just helps clarify what information we actually needed to move forward.
Representative O'Neill, I will renew my motion that House File 3674 be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Representative O'Neill, you are on your way. Representative Albright, we will bring you down next, followed by Representative Garofalo. And Representative Albright, you are no stranger to this committee. You know brevity is something this committee greatly appreciates. I will move House File 3873 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs. Representative Albright, your bill is before the committee for proceed with your bill setup. Good morning, sir.
Mr. Chair, there is also an author's amendment that I would like to be moved.
Representative Albright, is that the A18 amendment, sir?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
I will move the A18 amendment to House File 3873 to get the bill in the shape that the author wishes. Questions to the A18 amendment members? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the A18 amendment to House File 3873 to get it in the form that the author wishes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The bill is in the form, the motion prevails, the bill is now in the form that the author would like. Proceed, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the work comp bill that we annually bring before you. It has bipartisan support by both labor and industry. Representative Mahoney and I have authored this in times past. The axiom that we use with these bills to assure the committee of the intentions on both sides is there is peace in the valley. This actually affords the opportunity to bring judges back to work on panels after they have retired. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Members, questions on House File 3873 as amended? Representative Nelson.
More of a comment. This is one of the smaller work comp bills that I've seen coming forward out of the commission in the past year. But otherwise, that's just a comment.
Very good. I'll take that as a compliment. Other member questions at this time? Seeing none, is there anyone from the public that would like to testify on House File 3873 as amended that is before the committee at this time? House File 3873 as amended before the committee. Seeing none, hearing none, seeing no other member questions at this time, Representative Albright, we will give you the final word, sir.
Thank you.
That was very compelling, Representative. I will renew my motion that House File 3873 be referred to the Committee on Jobs. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. You are on your way. Representative Garofalo, I will move House File 2926 before the committee to be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Representative Garofalo, good morning and welcome, sir. You'll proceed with your bill setup.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. First of all, let me apologize. I had a special guest testify. I was going to testify today, but a Mr. M. Pence of Indiana is tied up and unavailable. Had him fly in, but he's not going to make it today. I guess that joke sucked.
I got an idea. Under the bill.
Yeah, under the bill. So, Mr. Chairman, this clarifies the definition of what ratification means. Really, it's restating what current law is, in my opinion, and just makes clear that the legislature may specifically include ratification contingent on specific conditions. That's the way laws are, so it's the same thing. That's what this bill does, and I would ask for member support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I do not see any member questions at this time, and I did have a testifier who was looking to testify on the matter. Mr. Devin Bruce from MAPE, if you'd like to come forward, sir. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Devin Bruce. I am Public Affairs Coordinator for MAPE, the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. In my capacity, I represent about 14,500 state professional employees across all state agencies. Thank you very much for providing us the opportunity to testify. MAPE opposes House File 2926 as it interferes with the rights of hardworking state employees to negotiate the terms of employment in good faith with their employer. We oppose the proposed changes to the contract ratification process as they are redundant and unnecessary. The current language in Minnesota statutes is clear. The executive branch negotiates collective bargaining agreements with the representatives of the state's bargaining units. Both the membership of the bargaining units and the executive branch must approve the terms and conditions of the agreement before it is submitted to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and then it moves on to the full legislature for approval. The legislative approval process completes that ratification process, since the other parties, the executive branch, and the bargaining units have already signed off on the conditions, and those agreements cannot be altered by the legislature. House File 2926 would permit the legislature to include additional terms and conditions on one of the parties to that agreement before the contract can be implemented, and therefore violates PERLA. The changes proposed in this bill appear to be one in a series of attempts by the legislature to insert itself into the bargaining process and permitting our members' livelihoods to be used as political bargaining chips. They deserve better than that. They deserve the respect and dignity that affords all civil servants. These contracts should stand alone for your consideration on their merits, not what the legislature can bait the governor into signing in exchange for them. We thank you for honoring that commitment and that principle this past Monday when you ratified the contracts in a clean bill. We ask you to reject House File 2926, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Mr. Bruce, thank you for being with us and for providing your testimony. Are there any member questions right now, Mr. Bruce? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I want a roll call on this bill.
Duly noted. Member questions? Seeing none right now, Mr. Bruce, we're just going to ask you to stand by in case some questions do come up. I do not have any other testifiers on this bill that have asked to sign up in advance. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to speak on House File 2926? 2926, that is before the committee this morning. Anyone else from the public wishing to speak on House File 2926? Seeing none, are there additional member questions at this time? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Given the trouble that we have been having in trying to get these contracts approved over the last couple of years and the games that have been played, especially attaching the contract to the preemption bill last year, to me that was absolutely atrocious. I find it really difficult to take some of the bills that are being presented by the Republican majority right now as being anything that's helpful to the process or to the state, so I definitely will be voting no.
Other member questions at this time? Representative Garofalo, we will give you the final word, sir.
I ask for member support.
I renew my motion that House File 2926 be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Pugh.
Aye.
Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Representative Fenton.
Aye.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Halverson. Representative Jessup.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Nash.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Peterson.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Sandsted.
No.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative West.
Aye.
Representative Joaquin.
No.
Results of the roll call being 11 ayes and 6 nays. The motion does prevail. House File 2926 is re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you. Our final bill this morning is House File 3606, and as the author is making his way to the testifying table, we have, again, a number of people who have asked to sign up in advance, and Santa will also be passing out a number of written comments and testimony here today as well. Members, if you recall, we do have session that starts at 12 o'clock today. Right now it is 10:50, let's call it 10:55, and my intentions are to go until 11:50, so that gives members an opportunity to be able to get from here to session on time. So this is about 55 minutes for the bill. Representative Christensen has assured me that his setup will be brief to be able to allow the members of the public here today to be able to speak for or against against House File 3606. And that should leave us some time as well for members to be able to ask questions and to consider the matter. And it is the intention of the chair that we will hear public testimony and committee testimony today, and we'll then get a chance to move forward at that point as well. I will attempt to be fair to all sides on the issue. Again, at this time, we have 12 people who have signed up in advance. Again, if you are interested in speaking on the matter, ask you to proceed forward at this time as well to get checked in. And so with that, I'm going to move House File 3606 before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Christensen, welcome if you'll begin with your bill setup, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 3606 provides statewide uniformity on the regulations of the use or sale of auxiliary containers, and it provides cost savings for Minnesotan consumers.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. I think what we'll do is we'll proceed with testimony at this time, and I will start with those who are opposed to the topic, and we'll ask to be able to help expedite this process, that you begin to kind of line up along the rail here, because that will be able to help us to get folks in and get a chance to start doing some testifying and to help us to be able to get everyone in. What we're going to do is we're going to start with a two-minute limit. I'm going to be rather
I don't want to say extremely flexible, but I'm going to let you finish your thoughts if the stop sign comes up. But again, finish the thoughts that you have, either pro or against, because the members do also want to have a chance to visit and to give folks an opportunity to be able to share their thoughts. So with that, we'll have you come down and identify yourself for the record with your first and last name. One of the things that the committee does like to hear is your thoughts. If you do have written testimony, that is something that we'll ask you to submit if you would like to. But again, that sometimes, unless it is tailored to that about 2 minutes, you may end up not being able to finish your full written testimony. So we do ask you to consider your high points, both for or against, as you're sharing your thoughts with the committee. So with that, welcome to the committee. You'll state your name and who you represent, if anyone, and proceed with your testimony. And again, we'll ask you to watch with Megan, who's the second person to my right. She will help you with the time on that. Proceed,
excellent.
Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Andrew Johnson. I'm on the Minneapolis City Council and the Intergovernmental Relations Chair. It's good to be back before this committee. You've helped me with some pro-small business ordinances and or legislation in the past, so I appreciate it. You know, as elected officials, I know you can relate to the honor to be entrusted with making decisions on behalf of the people you represent. Just a few years ago, I worked with residents, local businesses, and my colleagues on the City Council to bring forward an initiative to move away from polystyrene containers used in the fast food and restaurant industry to products that are more recyclable or compostable. Since then, other Minnesota cities have implemented or are considering similar ordinances. As you know, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency delegates management of solid waste to local government through their solid waste management plans and by requiring management of materials according to the waste management hierarchy and efforts to meet the state recycling goals. In 2014, the state set recycling goals for the Twin Cities area to 75% by 2030. In Minneapolis, we found that our Green to Go ordinance is successful in diverting packaging from the waste stream for better use by recycling or composting. We found that residents, businesses, and their customers support this ordinance. If the city's ability to retain our ordinance is taken away, contamination in organics and recycling will increase. And this will result in an increased cost to process recycling and organics. They cannot be as a result of the waste contamination. So this is an effect. If this bill passes, it is a tax on our ratepayers. We estimated when our ordinance originally was passed that it saved about $20 per ton of recyclables in terms of diverting contamination. We process in Minneapolis 27,000 tons. So that represents about $500,000 in savings to ratepayers. So we would ask you today, please oppose this preemption and allow our local level to take care of the municipal waste stream. There's a number of benefits to Minnesota industry as well from our ordinance, and so we wouldn't like to see the Minnesota timber and wood pulp industry hurt as a result of this ordinance passing, or this law passing today. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Appreciate it. We'll bring the next person down, please. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you will state your name if you're representing your group and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Eric Forsberg. I'm a restaurateur in Minneapolis. I own three restaurants in downtown Minneapolis. And I'm here to oppose the bill because I come from a strange standpoint on this one. And where in the past, of course, I do actually support preemption on several items in Minnesota. This item is a municipal issue, and it's something that should become a statewide issue over time. In fact, it should become a statewide issue immediately. Polystyrene is an environmental issue. This is something that, as a restaurateur, I will speak for myself in this matter. However, I will say, as an organization, people that I work with will, by and large, support this as an issue. We represent a lot of the polystyrene that's being thrown into our waste system, and we can make a difference, and we can make a difference at a municipal level, and that's the biggest impact, and show people how we can do something that actually affects our communities and affects our communities in a positive way. The long-term effects of this are we'll be paying more in taxes because as you put polystyrene in into the waste system, it's going to cost us more at the end. Let's just take matters into our own hands now. Let's make a difference at a municipal level. And as a business owner, I can make that difference, and the cost isn't that high. I pay a little bit extra to make a big impact. So I ask that you oppose this and actually implement it at a statewide level further down the road. So thank you.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony today and being with us. The next testifier, if you'd make your way to the testifying table.
Thank you, Mr.
Good morning, and welcome to State Union for the Record. Who you represent, if you are representing a group. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Megan Cool-Stennis, and I am here to represent Eureka Recycling. We are a nonprofit social enterprise and zero-waste organization based in Northeast Minneapolis. But we collect and sort recyclables from all over the Twin Cities metro area. We have a material recovery facility, or a MRF, where we sort materials that residents and businesses separate from their trash. We sort these materials into over a dozen categories, and over 80% of our materials sold stay right here in Minnesota to be made into new products. We respectfully oppose HF 3606 because cities should have the ability to respond to the needs of their community members, including regulating unsafe or unhealthy packaging and products that can harm people and their environment. I'll stick mostly with the recyclable issues, since we have many other testifiers. We oppose this legislation because ordinances that regulate products and packaging help support recycling and composting programs by reducing contamination and are effective at doing so. These ordinances come with broad and long education campaigns for both consumers and food businesses, so it helps them understand more about the products that they buy and how to properly manage them after their intended use. Additionally, plastic bags, which this legislation also impacts, are blight on our community and environment and very problematic contaminant to all recycling facilities, including ours. We have several workers manually pull them out of the materials we receive, but many still get wrapped around the equipment. We spend 2 hours every day cutting out all the plastic bags out of our equipment. This is dangerous and unnecessary work that adds cost to the recycling program that cities have to pay, as Councilmember Johnson alluded to. Bag fees have been proven to reduce bag use. Washington, D.C. saw a 60% reduction in single-use carryout bag usage in the first year when a 5-cent fee was implemented. The legislation you are considering would prohibit a city from charging a fee that is kept by the retailers and would help restrict the use of problem materials. I urge your opposition on this issue.
Thank you for being with us today. Bring the next testifier down, please. Good morning and welcome. Please state your name and who you represent and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Bisco, members of the committee. Thank you for your time and opportunity to speak today. My name is Emily Barker. I'm a solid waste program specialist with the City of St. Louis Park, and I'm here today to speak in opposition to House File 3606. Since the 1970s, the Minnesota legislature has placed the responsibility for managing solid waste with the counties and the cities. As cities, we manage recycling contracts, provide education to help our residents understand what can and can't be recycled, and set policies to support quality recycling programs and reduce contamination. We also play an important role in achieving the 75% recycling goal set for metro counties by the legislature in 2014. It is our job to do these things, and we utilize a variety of tools to reach our goals. Different cities have different needs and concerns when it comes to solid waste. So determining the types of policies that will work best to achieve results should be left to local authorities who know the particular environmental and waste concerns of that community. There are a variety of reasons for a community to consider a policy on auxiliary containers, such as to-go food packaging. For some, it may be to increase the amount of materials that can be composted or recycled, or to minimize contamination in organics and recycling programs, while others may wish to reduce litter. There will be communities that will find a packaging policy on packaging is not right for them, but all communities should have the ability to have the conversation and make the decision locally. Prohibiting the implementation of policies regarding auxiliary containers takes away potential tools for cities and local governments to properly manage solid waste in their communities and creates a barrier to reaching the 75% recycling goal. The City of St. Louis Park has been a leader in recycling since the early 1980s, when the city began collecting recycling at the curb. Since then, St. Louis Park has continued its commitment to recycling and reducing waste, adding organized collection of organics at the curb in 2013, organics drop sites for multifamily residents in 2017. The city's zero waste packaging ordinance went into effect January 1st, 2017, with the goal of decreasing the amount of single-use food packaging in the trash. This policy was put into place after an extensive public process and discussion with stakeholders to determine what would best serve the needs of our community. Since implementation, businesses across the city, from small to large, have implemented these items, and now these items can be placed in the organics or recycling. We help reduce the amount we're sending to disposal and in turn, support the 75% goal. The City of St. Louis Park opposes this effort to undermine local authority related to solid waste issues and asks you to vote against this bill today. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us this morning. We'll bring the next testifier down, sir. And Representative Christensen, just to kind of help keep things moving, I may just want to have you step out and we'll just bring people in so that we don't have to have the time between with testifiers to walk down. So if you'd like to take Representative Christensen's seat, then we'll just alternate as we go through so we can make sure that we're maximizing time. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name, and if you're representing an organization, that as well. Welcome to the committee.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Andrew Papacosta. I'm with Gandhi Mahal Restaurant, a small immigrant-owned South Minneapolis restaurant, and Main Street Alliance, organization representing values-based businesses who are both concerned about the environment and sustainability, but also about the viability of those businesses. At Gandhi Mahal, as we are very concerned with the environment and sustainability, we are a small restaurant that are concerned about our bottom line. And we're celebrating our 10th anniversary in business in South Minneapolis this year, and we've been using environmentally friendly products from day one. Though the upfront costs are higher for those materials currently, they are coming down as more and more people are buying these materials. And we look at it in the long range in regard to lessening the impact on the environment. And we find from a financial standpoint, we've actually benefited by using these products. I handle the events and catering, so I do what I call zero waste catering. And we found that the goodwill created by using these materials has substantially increased our business by people, like-minded people, and just people who hear about us and really kind of applaud what we're trying to do and play our small part in pushing forward environmentally friendly practices. So with that, I'd like to say thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for your time and being with us this morning. We'll bring the next testifier down again, but just keep rotating it. You can stay in the seat that you're in. That's fine. You know, we just want to make sure that it's not like waiting in line at the grocery store.
Sure.
You have to keep moving up here.
All
so.
Right.
Welcome, and state your name and who you represent for the record if you are representing a group.
All right. Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Christina Mattson, and I'm here with Zero Waste St. Paul. We are a group, a citywide group, inclusive group of diverse network of community members that are hoping through advocacy, collaboration, education that we can ace zero waste. But here, I'm also here today as a oncology nurse. I worked in oncology for over a decade, and I've held the hands of people who have died from lung cancers that are attributed to smoking, but have never smoked a day in their life. People are being exposed to environmental toxins without their knowledge, and this is wrong. And the role of our government is to protect the citizens. Now, I'd like to pose a question to everyone here. The last time we went to a coffee shop, what type of number plastic? That caribou cup right there has a number 6 cap. Polystyrene, number 6 plastics, they are known to leach styrene with hot liquids, with aromatic compounds, and hot foods. They are known at low levels over time to be a known carcinogen. Are you okay with your family consuming these toxins hundreds of times a year? Are you okay with your children being exposed to that? Are you okay with the city not being able to protect citizens' health? This bill would limit the ability for a city to protect the health of its citizens. Just like when we had the smoking ban, when the municipality of Minneapolis took the lead and started the conversation statewide about protecting the health of our citizens. A bill like this would tie the hands and muzzle our city governments to protect the health of their citizens in a similar way. I want you to oppose this because it is government overreach, but also does not allow our government to fulfill its role. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today. Sir, if you'll go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Simon Hefty, and I'm a manager and creator of a green packaging division of Litton Paper in Minneapolis called Litton Eco. I started Litton Eco 12 years ago when I was approached by a client that wanted to start commercial compost pickup for food waste and packaging in their cafes. Since then, we have grown immensely, and I've become a product specialist on compostable food packaging. Due to my expertise, I have found myself on several city ordinance committees related to food packaging. I have proven that I am a reliable source for product questions and market costs. I distribute products from almost every manufacturer of compostable products in the United States. Over the years, more and more new manufacturers are opening. So we have seen a growth in the market from a product perspective, and this has in turn driven more competitive pricing. My business centers on the sale of compostable products. We have worked with the cities not only for the growth of our business, but also for the good of what is being accomplished. It is very clear that we have a waste issue in our state, and the ordinances that are in place are helping businesses to see the issue of the waste that they are creating. Profit is, of course, any business's goal, but businesses should be accountable for the waste that they are creating. Education to all businesses in Minnesota is the key, and an ordinance can help that greatly. PET or plastics in the last 6 months have risen over 30%. Bioplastics, PLA specifically, has just risen 8% in 2018, and that accounts for the total increase in the last 4 years. So 30% increase in the last 6 months versus 8% in the last 4 years. As the competition grows in this market of compostable goods, it brings costs from plastics to bioplastics that much closer. We have had several clients that have opened new restaurants and started off immediately with the compostable packaging. The cost of doing business for them has not caused them to fail over using alternative packaging to petroleum-based plastics. Some businesses that have changed over to using compostable packaging have seen an increase in profits. Due to the state's 2030 requirements for recycling levels, the counties and cities are setting up more and more commercial compost options. This is key for the positivity of businesses offering compostable and recyclable packaging. As a consumer, we will be looking for businesses that offer these packaging items to lower our trash bill at home and lower the solid waste overall. This has a direct effect on the argument that the ordinance to encourage using recyclable and compostable packaging levels the competitive edge for businesses. Consumers will choose businesses with the packaging that least affects their pocketbook and least affects the solid waste stream in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony being with us today. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. If you will also identify yourself and if you're representing a group. And
good morning, committee members. I'm Daniel Swenson-Klatt. I'm the owner and operator of Butter Bakery Cafe in Minneapolis. I was the one 12 years ago he was talking about. I'm also a member of Main Street Alliance and a mentor for Hennepin County's business, Hennepin County Recycling. 12 years ago, I decided it was time to do the right thing for my business, and I chose recyclable and compostable materials. And for 12 years, we've been successfully using those as our standard operating procedure. While the initial costs of being a pioneer were high, I have indeed seen costs get lower. I have seen lower costs, but I've also seen a raise in how our city and customers respond to what is happening. Times are changing. The way we're going is compostables. It's not plastics. There are indeed other costs involved that aren't written into plastics, and that does include the cost of waste, the cost of the taxes, the cost of the fees, the cost of the health, the cost to us as business owners who must pay those as a city is going to try to manage its waste. I'm thinking that for me it's a more economically responsible way to deal with my waste responsibly and not to put waste into the waste stream. I really only have one site. I should be there now. I ran there, I'm there, and I'll be running back. The dishes are piling up. But if I had more sites scattered throughout this state, I would still choose compostable and recyclable materials as the economically responsible way. I have been successful running with those, and I could do it across the state. You need to oppose this bill. We need to have a statewide version of this, but until we do, we need to let cities choose to make it happen.
Thank you, sir, for being with us in your testimony. Good morning and welcome. If you'll state your name for the record, if you're representing a particular interest, to state that as well. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tim Schaefer, and I'm the Director of Environment Minnesota. We're a citizen-funded public advocacy nonprofit with over 7,000 members around the state. We strongly oppose HF 3606 and any preemption of local restrictions on auxiliary containers. As a society, we simply produce too many things that are immediately thrown away. And that's going to become a huge problem for cities like St. Louis Park and Minneapolis. Solid waste management is a huge, complicated, and expensive task for Minnesota's municipalities. HF 3606 would rob them of a vital tool for controlling the costs by controlling the waste that enters the stream. So I want to thank the representatives from St. Louis Park and Minneapolis for testifying today because they're in the best position to speak to the likely impacts of HF 3606. They're testifying that the measures on the books are popular, economical, and effectively implemented. And that's what's key here. But I want to be very clear. Environment Minnesota supports smart, fair local restrictions on commercial waste, like those already enacted by St. Louis Park and Minneapolis. But if this preemption measure takes effect, we will fight for a statewide ban on outdated, tough-to-recycle materials like polystyrene, which is a public hazard. And if this committee is truly concerned with piecemeal restrictions, statewide bans are the next logical step. In the meantime, we believe locally supported, reasonable restrictions like Minneapolis' Green to Go help consumers and ease the solid waste burden on cities. Allowing municipalities to set their own waste restrictions is a fair compromise, one that cities are already taking advantage of. So please don't gamble by throwing it away and vote to reject HF 3606.
Thank you for being with us today. Appreciate that. Good morning and welcome. You'll state your name for the record. If you are representing an interest, you will identify that as well and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you. My name is Heidi Ringhofer, and I represent two groups this morning. One is the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District in Duluth, Minnesota, and the Solid Waste Administrators Association for the state of Minnesota, which is a company or group of counties that deal with the solid waste that we're talking about today, our potential solid waste. Again, I represent both groups. WLSSD, which is an acronym for Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, and SWA, the Solid Waste Administrators. I want to talk about today our concerns with the measures included in 3606. But across the state, local governments are responsible for the proper management of solid waste and for achieving various waste reduction and recycling goals. SWA is very concerned about language in 3606, as it takes away options for local governments to properly manage solid waste in their communities and meeting waste reduction goals set by the state of Minnesota and local communities. Determining which policies will work best to achieve waste management goals and responsibilities in a given community should be left to the local authorities who know the specific environment and waste issues in that community. And now specifically, switching hats to the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, we run a large composting facility where we annually take in 3,000 yards or 6,000 tons of material that we compost. That's kept over 35,000 tons of organic materials out of the landfill in the last 15 years. We are very concerned about the ability to control our inputs, and we say that to maintain the quality of our compost, we have to retain the ability to control the materials we are accepting for composting. In summary, WLSSD and SWA encourage you to consider the far-reaching impacts of House File 3606. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Finn, before we get to you, I want to make a quick announcement. It appears like we have our final three testifiers on the opposed side of this. If those who are for would like to start getting in line as well, we will be getting those folks ready to go here as well. We've been at about 25 minutes or so with the opposition. We do want to leave some time for both sides to be able to visit. Ms. Finn, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Ann Lindstrom with the League of Minnesota Cities. That's okay. There's two ways.
Sorry, that's what caught me. Thank you. I'm a mistake. Not the first one today, probably the last. But
there are 853 cities in the state of Minnesota, and 834 of them are our members. And on behalf of them, I'm testifying today in opposition to this bill because it strips away local authority and control from our members. I think that it bears repeating that when a city explores regulations ranging from a bill like this to transportation network companies, it is done thoroughly, publicly, and deliberatively. Our members are held accountable by elections, and more often, as many of you know, who've served in local government at the grocery store, at the post office, at church, and at work.
We have a list of 93 cities that have passed resolutions supporting local control in response to several bills we have seen this past biennium that are targeting and eroding local authority, the smallest of which is the city of Wendell with a population of 167. So we have a wide-ranging membership that is unified in opposition to preemption in the many forms it takes. And we ask you to oppose this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Good morning and welcome. Go ahead and state your name if you're representing an organization and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Charlie Vanderetti for Metro Cities, which represents cities across the 7-county metropolitan area at the legislature, executive branch, and the Metropolitan Council. Metro Cities respectfully opposes House File 3606, which would preempt local authority related to auxiliary containers today. This bill contradicts Metro Cities' policies, which support local authority and allowing municipalities to work with their local businesses and their local community members to decide their own local ordinances. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your time. Good morning, sir. If you'll identify yourself for the record, if you're representing a group, and identify that as well. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Benke. I'm the Director for the Resource Management Assistance Division at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The agency opposes this bill because, as you've heard from other testifiers, the local units of government across the state are charged with implementing the programs to develop and take care of our solid waste. I appreciate the fact that we've talked trash this long in this committee, and it's rare that we get outside the environment to do that, but it's an important issue. And the tools that the local units of government need can't be taken away as they have those discussions. The deliberate process that each community takes as they look at this weighs a lot of different factors, and we encourage them to weigh all the factors as they look through these issues and as they implement. But it's not the state's decision to make. It's the local units of government's decision to make, and taking away these important tools has a big impact on their ability to manage the waste in the way we want it to be managed according to the waste management hierarchy for the state. We've heard about organics management, recycling management. A lot of different products have a negative impact on how we can manage those wastes. So we need to make sure that the local units of government can make those decisions as they go forward. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. And just a point of clarification, we're talking trash, we're not trash talking, which I want to compliment the testifiers and everyone for their very respectful manner today. That's greatly appreciated. Sir, welcome. If you'll state your name and if you're representing a group, and proceed with your testimony.
Committee Chair, members of the committee, I'm Michael Soik. I'm representing Minnesota Faith Communities. This preemption bill is especially concerning as to how clearly it shows a contentious divide between different communities in Minnesota. It seems like this bill is coming from areas of Minnesota that don't really want the big city to tell them what to do and what auxiliary containers that they can use. But they have no problem using preemption to tell the big cities what they can do and can't do. So this is so important to them that they don't even look at the science or environmental impact that's prompting these communities to take action on these on this issue. We all know that plastic pollution, we all have a plastic pollution problem. The science is simple. Watersheds drain, floodplains flood, plastics float. Right? That's why we have so much plastic, microplastics, everything in our waterways and in the ocean. Okay? What helps one community decrease litter and waste and increase recycling and become more sustainable doesn't always work for all communities. That's why it needs to be at the local municipal control. Creating a statewide ban to prevent local governments from encouraging healthy, sustainable to-go packaging in auxiliary containers only perpetuates the use of bad actors, bad players, or bad containers. Unfortunately, right now, big business and destructive economics is preventing people from making that choice of having sustainable containers. Right now, our government is being influenced and controlled by big businesses, both which aren't, they resist listening to consumers and citizens. Imagine where we'd be right now if big tobacco would have used preemption to prevent cities from deciding you can't smoke in local buildings. As a community member, as representatives of communities of faith, we ask you to work with city governments to find better solutions. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us this morning, sir. Good morning. Identify yourself if you would for the record, and if you're representing your group, then proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today. My name is Kelly Kish. I am here on behalf of the Minnesota Composting Council. We are a statewide nonprofit whose goal it is to help expand, support organics diversion and composting within the state. As you've already heard today, Minnesotans, 40% of what the average Minnesotan throws away is something that could have been composted. Ordinances such as Minneapolis Green to Go and St. Louis Park's Zero Waste Packaging Ordinance help make sure that what comes out of those composting programs is a product that is sellable. If contamination from plastic-lined paper items such as many standard coffee cups, to-go containers, gets into that compost, that plastic lining on the inside of that cup does not come out from the finished compost, so we're effectively putting plastic into the soil. We know we have plastic in the ocean. We know there's bad long-term effects of that. That has not yet been shown to be true in our soil, but you can't believe it's going to be good. Minnesota right now does have very low contamination rates across the board. We're an environmental leader in that, and we should be very proud of that. Not allowing local units of government, as you've heard many times, to have the ability to restrict these containers to produce a sellable product from compost, to produce recyclables that have market value, really just increases the cost for disposal of all of those items. And it could also limit the expansion of the composting industry in Minnesota as a whole. And just really quick, want to tie it back to our state goal of 75% recycling and composting by 2030. 40% of what we throw away is compostable. We need to be able to have these abilities at the local level to make sure that we can make progress towards meeting those goals. Minnesota Composting Council respectfully asks that you oppose Bill 3606.
Thank you for being with us this morning. Good morning, sir. Please identify yourself for the record, and if you're representing a group, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Bruce Newstead. I work for the members of the Minnesota Retailers Association. We want to thank Representative Christensen for bringing this bill forward. You've heard today a little bit about the patchwork that exists in this regulatory area today. You've heard about Minneapolis and St. Louis Park, and certainly St. Paul has had some conversation along these lines, and we'll see that conversation coming back again this year. This patchwork does actually provide problems for consumers and businesses, and especially retailers, quite frankly. Let me put a little context around that. For large retailers, their model depends on consistency across the state, consistency of delivery of product, and so this interferes with that. For mid-sized and small retailers, this is a very competitive issue. When you have somebody across the street that has a different set of rules than you do, it quite greatly impacts your model. And as we heard earlier, consumers are certainly price conscious, and so we're putting some of our retailers and consumers at a disadvantage in local communities, especially our small ones. And finally, I want to mention for immigrant community, we see some pushback on this type of regulation. We saw it greatly in St. Paul, where we felt like it was stifling some economic development, as well as some other areas that would have been beneficial to our community. I do want to say overall, though, and I know others will disagree with this, this is not about taking away regulation from local government. This is about recognizing this is an area of policy that rises to the state level. As retailers, we understand that. We have statewide paint regulation, not city by city. In fact, we're, I would say, a partner in that with the paint care program. So some of these things should be reserved for the state level, and we would contend that this type of regulation is a great statewide issue as opposed to a city-by-city issue. So with that, Mr. Chair, I do want to mention on the local argument, there is nothing more local than a retailer that connects with their consumers. We actually heard from some great retailers here today who do the right thing according to their model and have made the right decisions, and the Retailers Association certainly believes in recycling. We certainly believe in working with our local communities on that. We just think the policy of what's recyclable and what isn't should be set at the state level. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for being with us this morning. And I'll have the next two testifiers come down, because there'll be two spots here, and again, we want to kind of keep things moving so that we can make sure we get everybody heard this morning. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you would again state your name for the record, and if you're representing an organization, we'd appreciate that. And
good
proceed
morning,
with your testimony.
Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alinda Suarez. I'm owner of one of the small business on the East St. Paul. It's a restaurant called Taqueria Los Pasantes.
I'm just going to ask you to draw a little closer to the microphone. We're just not quite picking up all of your comments.
Okay. I'm the owner of one Mexican restaurant on the East Side. The reason that I'm here today is because you know, we've been, as a small business owner, I've been trying to do the right thing because I'm aware of the environment too. We've been trying to do the right thing on our premises and in the restaurant, serving and, you know, like reusable plates in the premises and reducing waste and everything. But it's just difficult for us to afford a different kind of containers for to go. The prices are like double for the one that we're using right now. And I'm not in the right area. You know, it's like low income area that we cannot raise prices just, you know, like every time that we need to do something that it's, that is change. Another thing that I wanted to add is that I don't feel it's fair for the government address just one sector of the businesses, which is the food industry, when you can go to the store and buy like a big screen TV, and once you get the package, you know, the styrofoam in there is like bigger than the product itself.
Thank you for being with us this morning. Appreciate you stopping by and visiting with us. Good morning, sir. Could you identify yourself and if you're representing an organization or group, and to do that as well, and then proceed with your testimonies. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Visco and committee members, my name is Scott Van. I am co-owner of Van Paper Company, located in St. Paul. We are a 102-year-old family business distributing food service items such as paper, plastic, foam, fiber, and aluminum. Our customers include cafes, delis, bakeries, meat markets, restaurants, convenience stores, and coffee shops. We are happy to provide our customers with a variety of choices that they feel best suits their needs for their products, customer base, or business model. We are environmentalists too. I believe in reduce, reuse, recycle, and I can't wait for the day when we can compost curbside in St. Paul, a big city that was alluded to. But that's not happening right now, and we just feel many of these ordinances are a bit ahead of their time, and they're forcing our customers to use items or choose items between items that do not work for their products. We are here in support of House File 3606 because of those reasons, and also a low-cost item doesn't work in high-cost containers. Someone catering a wedding may choose high-end plastics in silver or black. Many of our customers have numerous locations across the metro area, and they have to deal with the difficulties of complying with city by city. We think that the cities and municipalities should focus more on comprehensive recycling instead of just banning certain items. Indeed, some cities in the country are actually reduced recycling polystyrene. I think science and practices and technology will help in all ways, recycling and composting in the future. But again, we're pushing too far too fast, and that's hurting some of our customers. These ordinances do not accomplish what they are set out to do, which is to reduce waste, as we've heard here. The amount of paper and plastic food service discarded in the solid waste stream is between 1.7 to 3%, depending on which government figures are used. I don't think I've heard that all morning. That's a very small portion, in our opinion, not a real significant amount. Everybody here will go home and use shampoo bottles all made out of plastic and everything. Plastics are a big part of our society. We want to thank Representative Christensen for carrying this bill. We hope that you will support our customers' abilities to make the decisions that work best for them and the environment, and we'll all work together in the future, but to force it down city by city is harmful to the many businesses. Thank you.
Sir, thank you for being with us, and it looks like our last testifier is here this morning. Welcome. If you'll state your name and who you represent, that'd be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Hi, Chair. My name is Dave Cassetta, owner of Cassetta's. I am here in support of House File 3606. I believe this is an issue of fairness. The ordinance the City of St. Paul brought forth last year would have banned black recyclable plastic from my restaurant. It would have allowed black recyclable in large supermarket and grocery stores. This ordinance and other ordinances like this are unfairly targeting the restaurant industry. As a business, we try to be forward-thinking and plan ahead when developing our model that will keep our operations sustainable. I found a material that was cost effective and worked with my products and my customers. The black plastic we use is recyclable. At this time, there are no cost-effective comparable compostable materials that work for all our products. Casetas employs 300 people. The container we use now works fine. Casetas would rather put money into our workforce instead of spending an additional $240,000 on to-go containers to replace what we currently use that has not all the pieces necessary to fulfill our menu. Banning certain products and mandating the use of other more expensive materials does not help us. Our customers, it simply adds costs, administrative burdens, and squanders tax dollars. Genio, Hormel, Oscar Mayer, Vaseline, etc. are large companies that would be exempted. Hmong Village and Hmong Town and many other small independents would be mandated. Today, our customers can make these choices the best fit for their needs. In our restaurants, you can find a variety of food packaging materials that are sensitive to our customers' choices in terms of prices and the ability of these materials to be recycled and composted. Packaging bans force all to use more expensive and non-functional food packaging materials. We are then forced to pass these increases along to our customers. More restrictive measures like this, the one that is proposed in St. Paul, without similar changes in all cities and industries, is unfair to the business who operate in the city. Casetas currently has a recyclable program. Casetas will recyclable our black recyclable plastic. Last evening, I purchased these items in the supermarket, and I'm requesting you see these items that would be exempted under the St. Paul ordinance, but would be mandated by all the people in small markets and restaurants, such as Casetas. Casetas promises to do its part. The recyclable company must do its part. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for being with us. I'm not exactly sure what happened if we have a branch of Casetas restaurant opening here or if it's by these lines. I'm not 100% sure. But something happened during your testimony, sir. I'm going to ask the bill author to rejoin us, Representative Christensen. And as I said, we were going to be patient in giving testifiers the opportunity to testify. We do have some time for member questions before we will take the vote, before we will adjourn today at 11:50 so that we can make a session over in the Capitol at 12 o'clock. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Roll call being requested and noted. Other questions for the testifier? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As it happens, the author happens to represent the same community and same county that I do. For as long as I've been here, I know that the people in my community go to the nth degree to be environmentally conscious. I mean, we have all kinds of programs, and also the fact that this is also a public health matter, so I'm just really kind of amazed or surprised that the representative is bringing this bill forward, so maybe a little bit more detail would be helpful.
Representative Christensen, if you want to provide a little bit more background, we do have some time.
Yeah, sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, we do, our districts are, somewhat close to each other. Communities are committed to recycling, and that's something that's important, and I think that's true. I certainly hear from a lot of my constituents being frustrated, on this issue. I hear from small businesses, concerned that this could come to our community. I don't think it will come to our community. I don't think that's a decision that our local governments would make, but I certainly hear from constituents on this issue.
Very good. Representative Mason, follow-up?
Thank you.
Representative Szczesinski, followed by Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification for the author. Your bill would not ban, we heard from a lot of independent business owners who support Minneapolis. Your bill wouldn't ban those individual businesses from moving forward with what they feel their customers want and as far as packaging and the rest?
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Szczesinski, that's exactly right. This bill provides freedom to business owners to decide what's best for them and for their customers, you know, what their customers support. You know, all these businesses depend on their customers, you know, I think they're going to make the decision that, like these business owners, you know, came in, you know, thank you for coming in and, you know, talking to the committee, but, you know, that's the decision that these business owners have made with their customers, that it's right for them.
Representative Joaquin Falder, Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And quick question to the author. Why the retroactivity on 2.2 to 2.3?
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquin, it has to be retroactive or you wouldn't be able to, you know, eliminate this patchwork of regulations that's driving up the cost for consumers.
Representative Joaquin, follow-up.
Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure how to respond to that. That was quite an interesting answer. Representative Christensen, are you familiar with the 115A statute, 0.551?
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, I did not bring my pocket statute with me today.
Representative Joaquin, you may want to enlighten the committee on line of questioning you're pursuing.
It has been referenced here today quite a lot, actually, and that's the recycling goals that the state statutes have set out for counties to do, and that is 75% of solid waste generated has to be recyclable or compostable at the in the metropolitan counties, and 35% in the counties outside the metropolitan area. So I could understand the patchwork. What I'm concerned about is, you know, as a city council member, I'm used to unfunded mandates of 9 years. For 9 years, we're used to it. That's one of the reasons why I ran for legislature, because I was tired of unfunded mandate. This seems to be mandating that even though this is in statute, cities can't have the tools to actually achieve this. So are you concerned at all about cities not being able to face state statutes because of that?
Representative Christensen.
They've taken this tool away?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquin, you know, I'm concerned about these unfunded mandates on small businesses that are incurring these costs, and frankly, the customers that are incurring these costs because of this patchwork of regulations, and that is an unfunded mandate, you know, just like you're talking about.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So am I right in hearing you say that you're more concerned about unfunded mandates on businesses than cities and counties?
I'm more, Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquin, I'm more concerned about unfunded mandates on Minnesotans struggling to get by than on cities and counties.
Representative Joaquin,
thank you.
Did you have other member questions? And again, we are going to be taking this matter up before the end.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can see that this is going to be a circular argument. We're going to have a philosophical disagreement on that. But my problem is there is something in state statute that leaves us up to cities and counties to achieve. Now, like I said before, used to seeing unfunded mandates, but then to have an unfunded mandate and then say, cities, you don't have the tools to achieve it, is just like a whole other level of crazy. So we're going to make you do this, but we're going to take away one of the tools for you to be able to do this. So that's just something to think about. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joaquin. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Christensen. And I guess I could be part of the debate, too, because I'm saying what you just said applies to what cities are trying to do to businesses. And I really think this is a battle of local control versus local control, cities versus businesses. And our local businesses should be in control of what keeps the doors open. And so often we have all these mandates, and it is a hardship. As a former business owner that closed their doors because we couldn't handle all the mandates, I will tell you, it's hard to be open every single day when everybody's trying to manage your business from someplace else and has no experience in doing so. This is a door closer for a lot of folks because you're not talking about big corporations. You're talking about neighborhood places. You're talking about local-owned businesses. You're not talking about large corporations. And this is extremely sad to me that we do this to our businesses and just make it sound like, well, the city should be able to do it because this is what we're supposed to do. Well, the city should be engaging with the small business community to figure out how to do this instead of just saying, this is what we're going to do. We're going to mandate that you can't do this or you have to do this without looking at the financial constraints that we're doing. I am for different parts of exemption because we've totally closed down any communication that we do with our businesses. And it's just gotten to be this, you know, us against them battle all the time with not much dialogue. How many businesses do we need to bring in here to say, this will close my doors down? This is a big expense to me. We aren't that big. And then we all wonder, where did the jobs go? Where did the small businesses go? It's just nothing but large corporations. This is what happens to them. This is why they go away. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm saying when we have a bill before us that says we got to stop all these unfunded mandates on our business people, I'm saying, yes, that's true. Businesses closed because of this. When you hear them say that, they are telling the truth. It isn't just something they say because they don't want to do it. It is absolutely going to hit bottom lines. I get cities have to do this. I get they're mandated to do this. But at some point, there has to be a better dialogue so that things are done that works for both parties so that we don't have to have these types of issues come before us a lot. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Representative Joaquin because Representative Tice is responding to her question, and I have Representative Nelson very briefly and Representative Freiberg, and then we are going to vote after Representative Freiberg. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greatly appreciated. I believe a lot of the testifiers were actually talking about not wanting to deal with the patchwork of regulations. And if I actually had an inkling of belief that when we would bring forward something that would actually create a statewide mandate on this, they wouldn't be up here fighting against that as well. So we all know where that stands. I have to take a little offense for my city of St. Louis Park. They did work very hard with the businesses, and their ordinance actually allows the black recyclable plastic. It says recyclable or compostable, and if the and we all know science changes and technology changes over time. So a lot of this materials, even some of the plastics that aren't recyclable now, will be recyclable in the future. So sometimes ordinances should be broad for that reason, but my city worked really hard with the local businesses to put theirs in place. And, you know, it's hard for me when you talk about preemption bills because I don't want to look at my city council members and say, guess what, your election certificate does not matter as much as mine. And that's what we're talking about here. Thank you.
Representative Nelson, and again followed by Representative Freiberg with our final question and comment today. Well, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that just something struck me in the testimony here and in the back and forth here, but there are health codes in different cities, and restaurants have to, if they have multiple sites, have to deal with multiple cities. And some of them are different between Minneapolis, St. Paul, the suburbs, and so they have to deal with this already. So I didn't see that as a big thing or a big roadblock to overcome. The other thing is I'm hearing is businesses should be able to do business. So am I hearing that business should be able to do business and we should have no regulations and we should be able to do, we should be able to pollute, we should be able to have treat our employees the way we want, not pay them, whatever. I mean, it's just allowing businesses free reign. It almost sounds like anarchy, and that's a scary thought to me. So that's my comment.
Thank you. Representative Fiber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of these preemption bills that kneecap local governments are written in a pretty broad kind of vague way, and I have some concerns that this one might be as well if you look at the language of the bill. Any city or town or county is prohibited from regulating the use or sale of auxiliary containers. An auxiliary container is defined to include basically any bottles, include glass bottles that are designed for consuming or transporting any merchandise or food. You know, I was just looking through the ordinances in my city. You know, there's an ordinance there that it is, it says it's a littering ordinance. It's unlawful for any person to permit or allow or any collector to cast, spill, or deposit anywhere any garbage, recyclables, yard waste. I mean, to me, that says that's an ordinance regulating the use of glass bottles designed for transporting food. I mean, I guess I'd be interested to know if the bill author has any concerns that this bill might sweep more broadly than he intends.
He will respond, and that will also be his opportunity to make his final comments, and then we're going to move to the vote.
Mr. Chair, Representative Freiberg, I read the bill differently than you, but in that way, I don't think the language applies in that instance. But I would be happy to work with you to tighten up that language on that case to make sure that's not included. But that is not the intent of the bill, and I don't believe the bill applies to that. Mr. Chair, members, I think this bill is to help make products more affordable for consumers, to help our small businesses not have to deal with a patchwork of regulations across the state. And this bill is to help my mother-in-law, who lives in St. Louis Park, who likes to stop at the St. Louis Park McDonald's for a large dollar Diet Coke, because, then it lasts all day, and she's a hardworking small business owner who
you know, only has to make one stop then. But unfortunately, at the McDonald's in St. Louis Park, the cup generally tends to biodegrade before the end of the day, which is, you know, not good for consumers. And I think, you know, this is why businesses and consumers together should be able to make choices for them. And also, I'd like to have a happy Easter, Mr. Chair.
Representative Christian, with that, I renew the motion on House File 3606. We refer to the General Register. Roll call being called, requested. The clerk will take the roll on the call on the vote.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Pugh.
Aye.
Representative Bliss. Representative Fenton.
Aye.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Halverson.
No.
Representative Jessup.
Pass.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Nash.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Peterson.
Aye.
Representative Kwan. Representative Sansed.
No.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
Representative Joaquin.
No.
Representative Jessup.
No.
The result of the roll call vote being 9 ayes and 10 nays, the motion prevails. Excuse me, 8, let me clarify. That on a vote of 9 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does prevail. That is our final business for the day. We are